Okay, so welcome back, everyone, to our Experience Shabbat Shiur, and tonight we are going back to, if you remember, we started a four-part mini-series within this Experience Shabbat series, and the goal of these 4 weeks that we've been working on, again, we took a hiatus last week in which we spoke about the connection, well, 2 weeks ago, in which we spoke about the connection between Torah and Shabbat, but we're talking about, over these last few weeks, about Shamor and Zachor, and how we understand how they're interweaved together, and what we are supposed to get out of it. Several weeks ago at this point, we spoke about Shamar and Zachor as a general, both of them together. The week after that, we spoke about Zachor, the idea of what it means to remember Shabbos. And tonight, we're going to speak about, God willing, Shamar, the idea of guarding Shabbos. So, of course, the discussion begins, as we've been saying over this entire mini-series, from the Psukim. What did the Psukim say? So it's all, we have to wait until we get all the way to Parshas Vayas Chanan, all the way in Sefer Devarim, until we really have this term of Shamar Siyom HaShabbos. Of course, I can't remember if it was in the Shir or after the Shir, someone pointed out to me that we do, of course, have the words Vishamru V'nei Yisrael, so that language just come up very early on, all the way in Sefer Shemos. So what do you mean, Shamor really only comes up in Vayas Chanan? When I say Shamor really comes up only in Vayas Chanan, I mean the way that it's phrased, of Shamor Siyom HaShabbos, that only comes up later on in Parshas Vayas Chanan. So what does the Pasuk say? Shamor Siyom HaShabbos L'Kadosho, that we should guard the Shabbos in its holiness, Kasher Tzivcha, as we've been commanded, Hashem Elokecha, that God commanded us. Sheishes Yamim Tavod V'Asizekum Lachtecha, excuse me, for 6 days you shall work. V'yom Hashvi Shabbos LaHashem Elokecha. On the seventh day, it should be a rest for Hashem your God. Lo Taseh Kum Lachay. You shouldn't do any work. Atah V'incha V'itecha V'Abdecha V'Amascha V'Shorcha V'Chamorcha V'Chol Be'am Techa V'Gerecha Asher V'Shorcha. And all these other people who are in your household, all these other animals that are in your household, also should not be doing any work. L'man Yanuach Abdecha V'Amascha Kamocha. So that you shall let your servants take a break. Let they should be able to rest just like you are able to rest. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and Hashem your God took you out Misham from there. It was run to with a strong arm and an outstretched hand. Alkein, therefore, Sivcha Hashem Elokecha La'asos Yom HaShabbos. God has commanded you to keep Shabbos. So three noteworthy points to bring out from these psukim, or three major things that are sort of, if you had in your mind a way to bold the words that I just said, there were three things that stood out. So number one is the obvious one, and that is the fact that we say Shamor Yom HaShabbos, right? The first time we received the Ten Commandments, we're told Zachar Yom HaShabbos, and now we're told Shamor. So why is it that it changes to guard instead of remember? Two, the other major difference that we have in these psukim is regarding why we keep Shabbos, or what major catalyst event is it that caused us to keep Shabbos. So when all the way back in Parshas Yisro, when we learned about Zachor, so we were told that Ma'aseh Bereishis, the creation story, the fact that God created the world, is the reason why we are remembering Shabbos. And now we're told that we are guarding Shabbos. Why? Not because God created the world, but because God took us out of the land of Egypt. We were slaves, we have to remember that. And for some reason, that is what has enabled us to keep Shabbos. And then finally, the last point that is noteworthy, we're not going to spend too much time speaking about, but should be noted regardless, is that of this final pasuk, when we're told, Alkein Tzivcha Hashem Elokecha, therefore God has commanded us to keep Shabbos. It's interesting, when we learned about this in the first set of Ten Commandments in Parshas Yisro, it doesn't say, therefore God has commanded us, it says, therefore God has blessed us with the ability to sanctify Shabbos, and now we're told that God has commanded us. So there is clearly a very strong difference in language, but again, we're not going to spend too much time speaking about that, because I want to speak about three themes in particular regarding the overall theme of Shamor. Number one, we have to understand what the notion of Shamor means, what it means that we are being told to guard Shabbos. How are we supposed to understand that? Number two, we have to understand, as we've mentioned previously, that Shamor is the aspect of Shabbos that is intrinsically connected to the negative commandments, to the lo ta'aseis of Shabbos. So we have to understand what the connection there is and how to further internalize what that really means. And number three, we have to understand what the connection is between Shamor and Yitzias Mitzrayim, this idea that we were taken out of Egypt. What's the connection between being taken out of Egypt and the idea of guarding Shabbos? And again, why was Ma'aseh Bereishis, why was the creation story left out as a connection to Shamor? So number one, so the first one over here of what does it mean to guard Shabbos? So I don't have any fascinating, I think it's a fascinating insight, but it's not the one that's based off of the sources in my mind as much as it is based off of just a certain sense, a certain level of common sense. What do I mean by that? So we said previously that no Jew is called a Zachor Shabbos Jew. Every Jew is called a Shomer Shabbos Jew, right? That's clearly from this version of the Ten Commandments and not the first version of the Ten Commandments. So we have to wonder, what is all the fuss about? Why is being a Shomer Shabbos Jew the banner that we use to call ourselves and not Zachor Shabbos? So the answer, I think, is that you have to look at two aspects of what Shomer really means. Number one, what does the word actually mean? What is the literal translation? So the literal translation, as we've been saying, is to guard or to watch or to look over. That's what Shomer actually means literally. And the second aspect that we have to look at it is regarding what do we usually use the word Shomer for in other aspects of Judaism. So one of the most well-known things that comes to mind, which is historically probably not the most accurate, but certainly in recent times, when we use the word Shomer, so we use the word Shomer for being Shomer Shabbos, but we also use it like teenagers like to talk about this. Are you Shomer Negiah, right? Do you touch the opposite gender or not? So that's a big use that we certainly have nowadays. We also have the phrase Shomer Torah U'mitzvos, that one should be guarding themselves to keep the Torah and Mitzvos. And number three, there's another, again, there are several other examples, but the three that came to mind when I was putting this all together is the idea of v'nishmartem me'ud nafshotechem, a verse that's been used a lot these days, that we so highly prioritize guarding and protecting our lives. But so those are three situations, three areas that we use the word shomer about touching other individuals when it comes to keeping the mitzvahs, and when it comes to watching and making sure that we're taking care of ourselves in life. What we see from here, evidently, is that we use this word when we really want to make sure that we are guarding and watching over, you fill in the blank. So when the NCSY counselor is trying to tell his or her students who are on a Shabbaton, you know, you have to make sure, try not to touch the opposite gender. You say, well, are you going to be Shomer Negiah, right? When it comes to keeping all the Torah and all the mitzvot, or when it comes to saving lives, how do you ask it? You're going to say, are you being Shomer your life? Are you making sure to protect over your life? Are you being Shomer all of the mitzvahs? Are you making sure to truly guard over and watch all of the mitzvahs? Essentially, what I'm saying over here is that we are Shomer Shabbos because we, as a nation, have always seen the incredible, immeasurable value of what Shabbos is and what it represents for our nation, that we, therefore, we guard this day with everything that we can. Because we see the value in Shabbos, we prioritize it as one of the things at the way at the top of the list to guard and protect and watch over it. That's what I think the basic understanding that we have to take away from the fact that we're told to guard Shabbos. Why do we guard Shabbos? Because it's so crucially important to us. It's one of the top things that we value and see in our minds as being one of the most important things. Of course, that's also one of the major differences between Judaism and basically any other religion. Any other religion in the world does not, for the most part, have a day of Shabbos. Many religions will have some sort of a day of reflection, maybe a day to go to their temples, a day to go to the churches, whatever. But for the most part, no other religion has a day of Shabbos in which we are totally disconnecting from the world and saying that this is going to be a day in which we're meant to connect to the Almighty. And therefore, we guard this with all our hearts and souls because it's so important to us. The second connection, or rather the second aspect of Shomer that we wanted to speak about, is that of the connection between Shomer and Yetzias Mitzrayim. Now, Shomer and its connection to the negative commandments. So what's interesting is that even though Zachor is usually, we're told that that's connected to the positive commandments, and Shomer is connected to the negative commandments, the truth is that even Zachor is also connected to the positive commandments. All the way back in Parshas Yisro, when we're told to remember Shabbos, we're also told then, Sheishes Yamim Tavor Vasizikom Malachtecha, V'yom Hashvi'i Shabbos Lashem Elokecha, Lo Ta'asekom Malacha. All the way back then, we're told not to do any malacha, right? So we're commanded not to do malacha all the way back then, but evidently there's a special aspect of Shomer in which we like to associate the negative commandments with Shomer. Okay, fine. So if that's the case, we have to understand what are the negative commandments and how then are they connected to the word Shomer? Well, so very basically, why would the negative commandments be connected to the word Shomer? Well, I would posit that the word Shomer literally means to guard or to watch over. How do you protect a certain day? Well, you don't protect something by being proactive necessarily. Usually you go on the defense. How do you go on the defense? Well, you tell yourself that you're not allowed to do certain things. So therefore, that's why perhaps Shomer is much more naturally connected to the negative commandments. And Zachor, again, why is that more connected to the positive commandments? Because how do you remember? You have to be proactive. You have to be active. And therefore, that's where the positive commandments come in. The general category that we refer to as things that are prohibited to do on Shabbos is that what the Pasuk says, and that's called malacha. We are not allowed to do malacha on Shabbos. What in the world is malacha? So this is a very famous question to which many people are already aware what the answer is. In Judaism, we don't define malacha halachically, the same way that we actually translate the word translates to like work. So what does that mean, work? Okay, that means I don't go into the office on Shabbos. That's what it should mean. Say Chazal, no, that's not the case. We don't define malacha as work when it comes to halacha. We define it as work from another perspective. So we'll see in a moment just what that is. One thing that is noteworthy to mention before we begin the brief discussion of what the Shabbos prohibitions are, and that is the Mishnah in Chagiga. We mentioned in our 5-minute Mishnayos class, for those of you who have been around for our 5-minute Mishnayos class, and the Mishnah in Chagiga says as follows: Hilchos Shabbos Chagigos Vameilos Harihim Kehararim Hatzluyin Basara. When it comes to Hilchos Shabbos and other things as well, we're just going to talk about Shabbos right now, although other things again are mentioned in this Mishnah. When it comes to the laws of Shabbos, they are like a mountain that is hanging from a hair, right? So that's you understand the picture. You have something very heavy that's hanging from a very weak string. Shehin mikra mo'at halachos merubos, because when it comes down to it, Shabbos has a lot of halacha, but very little scriptural sources to tell us that. What does that mean? Well, we know that there are 39 malachos. There are 39 general categories of things that are prohibited to do on Shabbos. However, there are only relatively very few mentions of the prohibitions of Shabbos in the actual Torah. So therefore, we are greatly relying on the rabbis to define for us what it means when we're told that things are prohibited on Shabbos, and to understand what the Torah's perspective is. But again, the Torah is relatively vague and not very talkative when it comes to telling us what is prohibited on Shabbos. That said, so basically, virtually all of the 39 malachos that are prohibited to be done on Shabbos, basically all of them are left out of the Torah. However, there are four that are included in the Torah. Those four are choresh, to plow, kotzer, cutting, mavir, which is like lighting a fire, and hotzah, carrying. Those four malachos are actually mentioned in the Torah. Why does the Torah mention these four specifically? So it's a good question. It's not so simple. The Mefarshim debate this heavily as trying to understand, were these four specifically more important than the other 35 that aren't mentioned? So it's a little unclear, but there is a back and forth about it. So where is it that the rest of the 39 malachos come from, the rest of the 35 malachos come from? If the Torah mentions four, and we know we have this magic number 39, where do the rest come from? So there's a Gemara in Shabbos that says as follows: Hadith nan avos malachos arba'im chasar achas kenegin mi. The Gemara wants to know, we know that there are 39 malachos, but how do we know this? What is this associated with? Says the Gemara, Amar lehu Rabbi Chanina bar Chama keneged avodos hamishkana. So this is the great translation of what malacha means. When we're told that we have 39 malachos, where does that come from? It comes from the work in the Mishkan. Evidently, there are 39 categories of malacha, of work that happened in the Mishkan, that happened in the tabernacle, and therefore we apply that to the laws of Shabbos as well. There is an additional opinion that's much less quoted than the first one, but we'll say it because it is important to know. Amar lehu Rabbi Yonasan b'Rabbi Elazar, kach amar Rabbi Shimon b'Rabbi Yosi ben Lakonia, kenegin malacha melachto v'meleches shebatorah arim chaser achaz. Actually, if you look in the Torah, you want to know how we get the magical number of 39 malachos. If you count the amount of times that malacha comes up in context of Shabbos, there are 39 mentions of the word malacha. So that's a very understandable way to measure how many things are prohibited or how many categories there are. You want to know how? Just count the word work in the Torah, and you'll get 39, and that will essentially tell you that there are 39 things that are prohibited on Shabbos. What are these magical 39 malachos? So I don't want to list through all of them now because it's just going to take way too much time, and I don't actually believe anyone can internalize them in hearing me speak rapidly all 39 of what they are. However, I do want to give a general understanding of what each of them are. And the way I want to do that is by dividing them into four general categories. Very famously, all of the 39 malachos, although in and of themselves they are significant, and each one of them, you could spend hours and hours talking about each of them individually, there are general groupings. And Rabbi David Ribiat, in his very well-known book, it's a great book, The 39 Malachos, in which he goes through all of Hilchos Shabbos, and it's quite a magnificent work. It's definitely recommended, certainly, to get at least your feet wet in understanding what Shabbos is all about. He says at the very beginning that there are four categories that we have to be aware of. Now, again, the first category is a much more well-known title. It's called the Sidura de Pas, the order of baking bread. So if you look at what does that mean, the order of baking bread? Well, the first 11 malachos from 1 to 11 are anything that it would take to bake bread. So the final one is bishul or ofe, right? Cooking or baking. And the first one is choresh, and that's plowing, because how do you bake bread? Well, first you gotta start by planting the seeds, and then once you plant the seeds, you gotta grow and you gotta cut them, all those things. So all of those prohibitions are all going to be listed in the category of how you make bread on Shabbos. There are three other categories that he does list that are not as well known by their names. However, the way he groups them are so makes it so much easier to remember what the other malachos are, so I'm going to give them. The second one he says from malachos of 12 to 24 is what he calls the order of garments, or I guess the sidura de begadim. So what that means is that this next grouping of malacha is going to be all of those things that it would take to make a garment. So starting from the first one, which is gozes, and that's shearing, right? First, you have to start with cutting shearing the wool off the sheep, all the way down to korea, which is when you have to sew up, rip or sew, tofer and korea, you have to rip and sew to make a garment and put it all together. The third category is what he calls the sidura. The oros, which is like the order of hides, how you make the hides, right? Why do you need a hide? Well, because we use hides lots in Judaism. We make Torahs and we make mezuzahs, we make all those types of things. So that starts with the malacha. Where do the hides come from? So that the first malacha, it's 25 to 31. The first malacha is tsad, which is trapping, and it goes all the way up to mechatech, which is when you have to cut. That's when you cut all of the pieces of parchment to use them. And then finally, the last grouping of malachas from 32 to 39 is what he calls the order of construction. And so what does it mean, the order of construction? So it starts with kosev, which is writing. What does writing have to do with construction? Well, very simple. If you ever get an IKEA piece of furniture, if you get any sort of piece of furniture that you're putting together, you know that it starts with knowing which piece of wood goes into that piece of wood. And how do they do that? Well, you have to write A over here, or in this case, you write an aleph over here, and an aleph over there. So that's how all good building starts. And it ends ultimately with the malacha of hotzah. That's the final, that's the 39th malacha of carrying on Shabbos, because you got to carry these things to move from point A to point B. So those are the four general categories. If you remember those four things, the order of making bread, the order of making garments, the order of making hides or preparing hides, and finally the order of construction, you can almost put together what all the 39 might be. But again, however, their understanding what each of them actually entail could take hours and hours, if not weeks and years, to truly understand what they are all about. Ultimately, what it comes down to, the notion of prohibitions on Shabbos, we have to understand and wrap our minds around why it is that we're given these prohibitions, and why are we given so many prohibitions? What is it all about? And I think that the answer really comes down to one simple idea, and that is that we are told that God rests on Shabbos. What does it mean that God rests? Well, it means that God himself is actually not doing work. What does that mean? God doesn't have a body. We don't believe that he can actually has any sort of physical essence. So what does that mean? He's not working. That's a great question. But we're told that he's resting / not working. And therefore, by understanding that, we can use the clause of Mahu Afata throughout all of Judaism. We many times talk about this idea of just like whatever God is, so too you. You should also try to be like that. And therefore, I think that's what Shabbos ultimately comes down to, and understanding what the prohibitions of Shabbos are all about. You want to know why you can't work on Shabbos? Because just like God is not working, so too you should not work. And so that's something that many of us have heard since we were very little, but to internalize it from that perspective, I think is very powerful. We want to be like God, and being like God on Saturday, on the seventh day of the week, on Shabbos Kodesh, means not working. What does not working mean? Well, then Chazal defined that. That's the 39 categories, etc., etc., but ultimately, all of these details are trying to emulate God himself on this very holy day. That was the second grouping. That was the second idea that we wanted to understand regarding Shamor and its connection to the negative commandments. The final category of things that I wanted to speak about is that of Shamor in comparison to Yetzias Mitzrayim. We're going to do this first source outside, but then we'll do the second source inside. The first source is that of the Sefer HaChinuch. When the Sefer HaChinuch mentions the idea of negative commandments on Shabbos, he counts it as the 32nd mitzvah of the Torah. And when he's mentioning this 32nd mitzvah of the Torah, of the prohibition to work on Shabbos, he does two things. He compares it, number one, to Yetzias Mitzrayim. He does compare it to the Exodus of Egypt, but he also uses it and compares it to the creation story. And that's a very weird thing, because again, if we're assuming that Shamor is associated with the negative commandments, and in the Torah we read the Pesukim at the beginning, that Shamor is connected to the Exodus from Egypt, and there's no mention of Bereishis, so then how are we to understand that when the Chinuch talks about Shamor, the negative prohibitions, that he connects it both to the Exodus and to the creation story. So there is a beautiful piece, as we've quoted many times throughout this series, from Rabbi Eliezer Melamed in his Panini Halacha Sefer. He writes as follows in the English translation: the Israelites were not redeemed from merely Egyptian slavery when after the Exodus they accepted the Torah and Shabbat. They were also freed from their enslavement to nature and the struggle for survival. They were freed from the view that man's sole purpose purpose is to accumulate as much money and wealth as possible, even if it means controlling and enslaving others to that end. Jews observe Shabbat and must always remember that God created and sustains the world. Man's purpose is to cleave to God and his attributes and to feel himself from, and to free himself rather from the bonds of slavery to the evil inclination and the struggle for survival. In other words, you want to understand what Shamor is really all about. You want to know what the connection to Yetzias Mitzrayim is. I'll tell you, it's the following. It's that ultimately, why do we keep Shabbos? Well, the first reason why we keep Shabbos is very simple. Because we are trying to, as we said previously, we're trying to strengthen our faith in God. And to have a strong faith in God means to believe that God created the world. Also, what do we do? If we believe that God created the world, what should we therefore do on the seventh day of the week? We should rest to commemorate the fact that God created the world. So, of course, even the negative prohibitions are connected to the creation of the world. That's what echoes without saying. But you want to know at the end of the day, what enables us to keep Shabbos, what allows us to keep Shabbos, it's the fact that we were taken out of the land of Egypt. Why is being taken out of Egypt so important to celebrating Shabbos? Because being taken out of Egypt, it was not just a physical removal, but it was also a spiritual, emotional, and a mental removal, that it allowed us to alter our mentality and to understand what it truly means to be an Eved, not to a human, but rather an Eved to Hashem. If we want to know how to connect to God, we have to follow a very simple recipe. We have to remove all of those things that tie us down in life and take the slave mentality away from us, which has many connotations, and only try and serve God. If we can do that, then we can celebrate Shabbos properly. And that's why we're told that there is a connection between Shabbos and the Exodus from Egypt. Because when we were taken out of Egypt, we learned ourselves how to remove this negative mentality, this bondage mentality in our minds, and only in so doing are we able to then connect to Hashem as well. So therefore, as we enter into Shabbos this week, let us go in with the mentality of realizing that we must allow our minds to be free and not enslaved. And when I say not enslaved, I mean not to be bogged down by any of the other worldly matters. And that's not an easy task to do. But then again, being taken out of Egypt was not an easy task to do. The fact that God took us out of Egypt is for us to remember the fact that we have to remove all outward matters from our mind as we go into Shabbos. And the way, by the way, that I try and do this, I try and emulate this every single week just for myself, is when I say Kabbalah Shabbos, I always try to take a deep breath. When you take that deep breath, or at least when I'll speak for myself, when I take that deep breath as I go into Shabbos, it allows me to sort of just take stock and say, okay, I'm going to turn off the rest of the world right now, and then over the next 25 hours, I'm going to focus on two things. Number one is connecting to Hashem, and number two is connecting to my family. So as we go into Shabbos this week, let's go in with this specific idea in mind, to allow ourselves to turn our minds off, which in the world that we're living in now, again, is almost impossible to turn our minds off, to not constantly be thinking about the outside world, but we have to try. Try to remove the bondage, remove the shackles from our hands that make us think and ruminate about every other matter, and as we go in tomorrow night into the Holy Shabbos, let us be able to spend the next 25 hours not thinking about otherworldly matters, but thinking about connecting to the Almighty and connecting to each other, connecting to our family. Everyone should have a great night and a great Shabbos.